Hello, I'm Joan. I'm a Canadian family physician who also works as a restorative medical educator, facilitator, and coach. I create spaces that rehumanize the work of healthcare. I'm creating this podcast to remind myself, as well as anyone else working in a helping profession, that when you are working and caring for your human patients, you are the other human in the room. Hello there, healthcare humans. Thank you so much for coming back for another episode of The Other Human in the Room. I'm so excited to get to record this conversation with this particular healthcare human. I have enjoyed many healthcare human conversations that have been unrecorded with Catherine, but I'm so excited for all of you to get to know her and hear some of her story, because it's been a joy to watch pieces of it unfold when we've been working together. So with that, I would love if you introduce yourself to everybody.
Of course. So I'm really happy to be here. And I was just saying, I feel a little bit like I shouldn't, because I'm definitely still working on, I'm still work in progress. But basically, I'm a family doctor. I work in a community practice in Toronto. I'm also a doggy mama. I'm a yogi. I'm a runner. I'm a foodie. I'm a lot of other things than just the doctor that I can say now. And I'm also a lifestyle medicine doctor. That's me.
That's you. So just to get to know some of your origin story, like, you know, how early in your life did you know you wanted to be in medicine? Like, what was your journey to coming into medicine, and then more specifically family medicine?
I wanted to be a doctor when I was in high school. That's sort of when we had like biology class, and I started being more interested in the human body, how everything works. And my mom was a nurse, so I've had like that little influence. And then I went to university. I did human kinetics, so lots of biomechanics and different courses that sort of solidified the fact that I did want to be a doctor. Lots of volunteer, and then I got into medicine, and I pretty early on found out that my people were like family doctors. I think I thought initially maybe I'd do pediatrics, but it just didn't feel right. And then when I started doing at first it's like medical student rotations, and then I don't remember third and fourth year how many we had, but I was in a lot of different clinics, and I just felt like the family doctors had the same sort of personality as me, and it was nice that they did a lot of different things, and I liked following families, like seeing the babies, and also you have the parents as your patients, and I like that aspect. So yeah, pretty early on I made that decision, like within the first probably 6 months of medical school. And or whenever we start doing, like the first 6 months after we started doing rotation, which feels like so long ago now. And then I picked family medicine, and I didn't look back after that. I was happy with my choice.
Cool. How did you find both like the process of getting into medical school and then medical training itself? Like, were there aspects of it that you found more stressful? Were there aspects of it that you found less stressful?
Yeah, I think getting into medical school, like the application obviously is difficult, but I didn't really think about it. I was just, I really want this. I'm going to do all the prerequisites and do all this volunteering, but I enjoyed it. I was sort of one track mind, really focused. I did have like this idea of doing physiotherapy if this didn't work out. And then like the interview process was okay. I didn't get in my first year. I got in my second year. And then once I got in, I think that's when it started really being difficult. Like, it's just, you have a lot on your plate. You don't have a lot of time. But I still really liked what I was studying. Some things I didn't like as much, but I was lucky because I was part of the French stream in Ottawa. So it was a smaller class. So we had more like closer group interactions. And yeah, we kind of knew all of the people in our class. So it felt
Nice.
not as, I think, impersonal as other things down the road. And then I moved after my medical school, I moved to Toronto and then I did my residency here. And that was more challenging. Like my first rotation or my second rotation was internal medicine. And then there was a lot of putting you on the spot. And, that's when I think back that there are some, things that made practicing after residency more difficult at first. A lot of the shame stories and a lot of learning to forget your cues or not being able to go to the bathroom when you have to in residency and having to be on call for so long and being tired the next day and having to still stay around in the morning. So I'd say medical school was better and then residency was a bit more difficult. Although I did have a good, like my family medicine part of the residency was really good, but it's such a small part and the other parts were really difficult.
And you don't even like really realize how much some of that sticks to you until later on. Hey, oh my gosh. You're just like, in the moment you're like, whoa, that was hard. And then like for me, still sometimes like a decade on, I'm like, I think I'm still trying to make that mean preceptor happy in my mind somehow, you
Yeah,
know?
exactly. You think it's all normal in the moment and you have to unlearn all of these things.
Oh my gosh. So then what was the transition like for you to like solo practice? That can be such a challenging time because it's like, oh my gosh, now it's actually up to me. How did you find that transition?
I didn't realize it at first that it was difficult. Like, I think I just continued on my go, worked a lot. I did walk-in clinics. I did, like, my first year, I did extra training to do GP psychotherapy on the weekends. And then I started my own practice, fee for service. And yeah, I think I was just working like so many hours because I was used to it. So it felt like that's what I should be doing. And then I was still doing some locums at the same time. And I did a locum at a clinic that I liked. And that doctor was retiring a year or two after I had done that locum. So we reconnected. And then I ended up switching to that practice for full time. That's where I've been since 2016. So the first 2 years were a little bit everywhere, and then I sort of switched to just the one clinic, and I've been there since then.
Do you have a sense of when the go started to have diminishing returns? You know what I mean?
Probably off
Like
the bat, yeah, I wasn't so unhealthy. I was looking back and thinking about that today, and like in my first year, I remember feeling like we need more GP psychotherapists because there's so many people that need therapy and there's not enough. So then I just did that, and I remember that my schedule, like the clinic was open 8 to 8, and I had all these referrals for all of these patients that needed therapy. And I was like, okay, I'm just gonna work 8 to 8 because that's sort of the need that's out there. But I think after a couple of years, like probably 26, no, after I took over the practice, like a year after, like 2017, I think I realized, oh, I'm really tired. I think I need to do a little bit less. And that I don't think I really listened to my body that much. I continued to do go. I just sort of realizing that, yeah, maybe this, I can't really do this forever. Like I was putting my patients, like some patients that were on medical leave, and I was just thinking like, oh, I feel like I need like a week or two or four off. Like I just, we didn't really take, I didn't take vacation the first. I just felt like I had to make some money, pay back my loans. And yeah, I was still go. I started doing some a mentorship program with an older physician back then, and that was helpful, but it was still go, not a lot of room in my schedule. And then I think it's actually slowed down, or I started realizing that I needed to slow down more during the pandemic because it sort of gave you a like forced pause, even if it was just like the first couple of weeks, because like after that you get into vaccine clinics and other things. But at the beginning, like the first 2 weeks, like, okay, I'm gonna do a garden and I don't have to commute, so I have more time to do things. And then I sort of realized that I can't really continue. Like once we go back to work, which we thought was gonna be soon, like I can't go back to what I was doing before. So that's when I started to make or to think about making some changes, but I didn't really act on it right away because it was a pandemic. Everything was sort of, I don't know what's happening. So yeah, it took me another year, I think, after just to really start making real changes. But yeah, so it was a process.
Yeah. And that sounds like really relatable. Like I think sometimes we like there's some people where they have like a real like this is a biblical reference, road to Damascus moment, but like like the moment where like suddenly your eyes are opened and then you have to change from that day. But I think most of us, it's like we hear bits and pieces of advice, we have different moments of insight, but the like go 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 grind, the momentum is real. You're like, yeah, someday I'll think about my wellness. That's a good, I gotta write that down. I'm gonna put that on my to-do list. I can do that later, right? Like, I
For
relate to
sure.
that for sure. Good idea. I'll get to that after I do my charting
Oh yeah,
someday.
I read all the self-help books. I'm like, yes, I know what
Yes.
to do. I just don't have time to
Someday.
do it right now, but yeah, one day.
Oh my gosh. Yes, I relate to that so much. So then, what were some of those first steps you took to kind of shift things for yourself and make practice more sustainable?
Well, the first thing was going to a talk that happened to be given by you that talked about, it was at the Family Medicine Forum, and you talked about charting and different things I can't really remember, but I remember you saying, like, you can do it. You can just chart after each patient, and then you don't chart at night. And at that point, I'm like, okay, I'm just going to try to do that. And then that worked. I was able to finish my work, and then I did my notes in clinic, and then I didn't have as much to do at night. So that was sort of okay. I can do one little thing, makes a big difference. And it just opened up sort of the space for me to feel like I was something else than a doctor, and like then I could do things. I could, even just cook dinner, which I enjoy doing, but I didn't really, take the time to do. So I think like that first small step just sort of got the ball rolling, and then you sort of get a taste of, ooh, I can do something fun tonight. And then you do that, and you're like, oh, I want more of this. And then, you feel like you're a better doctor because that when I'm at work, then I wasn't so stressed all the time. And I think then you just have that proof that you can still have a life and be a good doctor or even a better doctor. And then it just kept going from there.
Oh, so good. You'd mentioned before feeling like some of the stuff you may have internalized, whether it was from residency or from other places, you then had to kind of unlearn. What would you say were some of the things that felt like kind of milestones of unlearning as you were going through the process of like kind of taking back your life and your time?
So many things. One thing that we worked on together was not multitasking, because I think we get really good at mul or we think we get really good at multitasking in residency because we just have so many things on the go at the same time. And in your day-to-day life, that's just you. I think I've realized that you're not as efficient when you're doing that. Like, oh, I'll check my inbox for like 2 minutes, but you're not really acknowledging any results. You're just quickly looking and say, okay, these things are in, I'll do that later. And then, well, that was like 5 minutes, where if you had actually dealt with one thing, then that adds to, what you don't have to do at the end of the day. So I think unlearning that multitasking is not a good, it's not actually a good thing, that was a big thing. Learning that, and I still have to remind myself, like, if I need to go to the washroom, like, go right now. It's okay if you're 30 minutes behind, just go. Or go have the snack, or go
That's a
drink
big
the
one.
water. I know, but it's crazy
Yes.
how in residency you sort of become this like robot of like, yeah, I will just hold things, or I'll just not eat until it's really late and I actually have time. But then you're also probably not that efficient if you're hungry or you have to go to the washroom. So that was another big learn. And then the other big one was learning to be okay with feeling judgment. And I'm not saying that patients judge me, but the comments about, oh, you just work those days, in the week. So I do work in the office like 3 full days, but I do have a day of virtual. I have a half day where I do my paperwork and then another full day with mismatch of things. But my patients just see my 3 days in clinic and don't see the other stuff. And at first that really bothered me. Like I don't want people to think I just work like 15 hours or whatever they think I work in my mind. I want them to know that I work in the evenings and I work on weekends. But then I sort of just got okay with it. It's like, it is my life. You just have one, and I do want to do other things than, be a doctor. Although I do love it now, I still, so I had to unlearn to be okay with people. And sometimes I think they're not even judging me. They're just saying that as a comment, and then I take it personally because that's what I would think back in the day if I saw a doctor just had clinic hours 3 days a week.
Oh, I can still get caught up in it. Like, I know it's like there's like what I teach and then there's what I practice, which is letting go of it. 'Cause they'll be like, oh yeah, you're never here. And and sometimes I'm like, I'm here the same amount I've actually always been. You know, sometimes I'm like get defensive and have to do an explanation and then I'm like, okay. But yeah, like you say, like when I was working way more, there were still comments like that. Like it doesn't matter. There will always be someone who's like, you're never here. And you could be there 7 days a week or 1 day a week, and someone will still say that to you. So might as well actually work the amount you want to, you know?
Yeah, exactly. People will be unhappy regardless, and or they'll be happy regardless. And
Yes,
out of
both.
my control.
Absolutely. Oh, totally. I love all of those unlearning lessons. Those are all,
And there's
they're
probably so
so
many more.
fundamental. Oh, sure. Yeah, but
I
like I
just,
love
these are the
it.
top of mind.
So then as you started to like create space, both like in your schedule, but also kind of like in your mind, like leaving work at work, leaving your patients at work more and more, what has that opened up for you? Like what is cool and new that's like unfolding in your life now that you have shifted your approach to your work?
Well, like one thing that I'm just, it's just so nice to say is that I love being a family doctor. And it's just, I found like that love again, right? When you have more space and you do things that are good for you and that are fun, then, and I remember sometimes hearing like people just love their job. And I was like, really? That seems suspicious. Like, what, why, how? And not that I didn't like it, but I was tired and I didn't have time for other things. So just creating that space made me love family medicine more. So that was a big, big thing. But then I had more time to do other things. So I, we have a little puppy. So that, I would not have been able to have a puppy if I still had those working hours and not being home until really late. So that has been a wonderful thing in my life. I got certified to do lifestyle medicine as a passion side project, which I'm not formally doing as like a specialist in, because in Canada it's a bit more complicated for family doctors to do it. But I still have the knowledge, and we have this Canadian association, so we have like a meeting quarterly, and I go to conferences, and a lot of the things I learn I still use in my practice because it's a lot about just using lifestyle to treat certain chronic illnesses and just to have a better health. So I use a lot of those things in my day-to-day life. And then I had the opportunity to go do a talk on lifestyle medicine in the summer, and I could actually say yes, and that felt so good. Like back in the day, I didn't want to add anything else to my plate. I was saying, no to a lot of things or yes to things that I felt I had to say yes to, but I didn't really want to do. So it was really nice to be able to say yes, to go and do that, to interact with patients that I don't know. And, it wasn't a financial thing. It was really just I wanted to do it because it was fun. I wanted to share my knowledge. So it opened up the door to that, and then also to my own health and family's health, like to cook more and to live by, what I teach other people, to have a whole food plant-based diet and to exercise and to do all the things that are never good for me. So it gave me space to do that. And then the last piece that I added recently, because I did have a little bit of room in my schedule, but I'm at the point where I have to start to choose what I want to do to make sure I don't then start overwhelming myself with all the other fun things that I want to do. So I've just applied to be a what do you call it, with like to take a student for 6 half days in the year, so like a longitudinal sort of I forget what it's called, but
Like the
anyway,
family
so
medicine experience thing. I think that's what they
yeah,
call it
that
at McMaster.
FML something. Yeah. I
So
forget
many acronyms.
the actual name, but basically just to have a student and to share, what I do. And now that I really love what I do, it's nice to have the space to be able to do that. So I think I just created so much space to do all of these fun things, and it's just been really nice. Yeah. So those are some of the things I'm doing. I traveled more. I have a trip coming up. I was able to take time off when we had a family medical thing, and then I had a health thing, which normally I would have just brushed off, but then I took the time to actually deal with it. And yeah, so it's been nice to be able to create a lot of, space for those fun things.
I think I bet those listening would love to hear some of like the pragmatic way. So like I hear a lot, I think from a lot of clinicians in general, and especially those that are sort of self-employed, so like family physicians or like outpatient clinicians, like, but how do you take vacation? How do you take time for yourself? Like both, what did you have to change internally about how you viewed yourself? And also practically, how did you manage taking those times for yourself? Like who did someone watch your practice? I think it's interesting. I think it's helpful to hear ex the many, many ways you can do it. So I'd love if you share as much as you want to, but like how you do that.
Yeah, for me, and that might not work for everyone because it is a commitment, but I just hire a locum, so it's a financial commitment because it is a big chunk of money. But for me, I know that you sort of have something with nurse practitioners, so that would probably be a really nice option too. I just never went that route. I just hired a locum, and it's sort of a win-win because it's physicians that don't want to have a practice right now for whatever reason, but they still do want to practice. So they come in and they work, the same hours as me, and they check my inbox and they deal with all the things. And then I come back and I don't have, like in residency, we would sort of go for a week. Someone would look at the inbox a little bit and just acknowledge the urgent things, but then you'd still come back and have to deal with the rest of your inbox. But I didn't want to have to do that. So I just, yeah, I hire someone, she comes in, she does my work, I come back and the inbox is clear and my patients have been seen. The ones that, some people want to wait and that's fine, but at least for me, it was important to have someone there that could see them and not just leave and not have anyone in my practice. So that way I can go and I know that things are taken care of and I don't have to worry that people that need to be seen won't be seen. And, mentally, you just have to be okay. Sort of the same thing as the hours I work with people, with the patients, seeing another doctor and sometimes maybe saying like, I really wanted to see you, but you weren't there. But yeah, we are human, as we talk about. And yes, I want to have some vacation, or I need to deal with my health, and that's okay. And you know what? Most patients understand. A lot of patients say, Recently, actually, someone told me, like, oh, I've noticed you didn't have any summer break. Like, your schedule online, it didn't say you took any vacation time. I hope you're going to take vacation soon. So that was so sweet. Your
So
patients
nice.
know you and they care about you. And it's nice for them to see that you do take care of yourself. So, yeah, so that's how I do it. It's pretty simple. I just hire locum and I leave and I don't have to think about it.
I'm like obviously big fan of locum, whether it's nurse practitioner or a physician or someone to do your work, because it still is wonderful to go away, even if you have the work coming back. But it is, in my opinion, more wonderful to have that work done for you. And I think it's the sustainable model. Like, my hope is someday it's not like a weird thing that we each have to make a decision about, but it's sort of baked into how we do it. Is that replacements are just part of the deal, you know?
That would be so nice. And I know other doctors at my practice do that as well. And, sometimes we'll cover each other too if we need to, but this just makes it a bit, we're all busy. So it's hard to cover someone else's practice entirely. So this just makes it a bit, it's a bit more easy.
Did you have any kind of hesitations or nerves before the first time you hired a locum? Like, did you have any personal barriers in your mind to hiring someone? Or was it okay?
I think because I was a locum at first, I sort of, and I know that I did a good job, and I, the patient seemed happy, and there wasn't really any big issues when I was locuming. So I think it wasn't as big of a deal for me. But, sometimes I come back and, I'm like, oh, maybe they like the locum better than me. You have that little like dialogue, but I have to remember that, it's okay if they do. Like, it's good to have someone else in the practice. It shouldn't be me all the time. So I did have sometimes to talk myself, but it's good for learning too, because you see a different approach to how to do things. And I learn things from the locums, and they probably learn things from the way I do it, things as well. So I think it's nice to sort of switch things up. Or like recently, when I had a locum, sometimes there's like chronic things or chronic symptoms, and having a different perspective. If it's not like you can't send them to specialists because there's nothing really specific, but having someone else look at it from another perspective, they can come up with different investigations or different solutions or things to try. So I think that's really nice for the patients too. So I've had to, talk myself into it sometimes, but I think for me, probably because I did it before, it sort of just seemed natural to hire a locum. It wasn't too, concerning, or I wasn't too anxious about it.
Oh, that's lovely. Yeah, it helps. I think it does help if you've been a locum recently. I think a bit of it is like, if there are some clinics I've worked at where locums are the norm, and there's other clinics I've worked at where locums are not the norm. And it's interesting how, even though I've worked in both of those places, I had different mental barriers of one versus the other, because it's sort of like you want to fit in with the culture, you know, which is why it would be nice if it was sort of just the culture. Just like teachers, you're calling sick, there's a substitute teacher. That's how it goes, you know?
It would be so nice.
It'd be so good. Someday we can just, well, we're making it happen ourselves, and then the government will catch up to us someday.
Exactly. We do our part, and then hopefully
Well,
the
that's a good idea. I guess I should do that for
system
everybody.
will get better.
Any I was thinking about a common thing that I recall us working on, and that I work on with like a lot of clients when we're doing coaching, is like the worries you have about patients that you take home with you. So we like kind of talked about the scheduling part. What sort of worries do you notice that you used to have that would like keep you up at night, or you know, a patient story would stick to you, and that you now notice, maybe it still happens because you're human, but like you notice you have less of that worry anymore?
It's interesting. As everything sort of got better, I definitely have less worries, but that's probably part of why starting in practice is so difficult. On top of working a lot of hours, yes, you do take your work home with you. Even if I didn't do charting, I would be thinking about, there's always one or two cases, and still to this day, where it's like, yeah, I'm not really sure. I've ordered what I think is the appropriate test. Maybe I'll send them to a specialist. Maybe, we need to look at something else. But I think now I have more of an open mind. Like, it's not just one, because I did this one thing. It's not, if that's not the answer, it's not that I'm a bad doctor or that, I didn't think about this other thing. It's like in that moment with the patient I had in front of me and the presentation, that's what I thought of, and that is okay, and that was right. So that's working with you, I think, I had to really work on that and switch, make the switch in in my mind about, like, I had so many thoughts about, oh, I'm a bad doctor, I make this mistake, or, and sometimes you send someone to emerge because you're really worried, and then the emerge doctor says, like, why did this patient come in? And the patient will tell you that. And, I know that most emergency physicians are really nice, and it's not all of them, but sometimes you have that one interaction and that sort of clouds your mind. And then anytime you send someone, then you're like, oh, was that the right call? Was it not the right call? Or sometimes you go home at night and you think, should I have sent this patient to immersion? So I used to have a lot of nightmares, and also waking up at night and having night sweats about and thinking about my patients in the middle of the night. Like, I would wake up and then I'd have ideas of what I should do. And then, oh, I should. Like, I wanted to go check my inbox, just go see if, like, the result was in, and did I miss something big, or was that the right call? Just doubting myself. And, most of the time my patients were fine and it was an okay call. And yes, sometimes, it's, we need to do more testing, or sometimes some things come back and it's not what we were expecting. And I think you just have to sort of learn to be okay with that. And I think in family medicine, that's what's difficult, because we know a lot of different things about a lot of things. But yeah, sometimes we don't know that one rare little things. And it seemed to happen a lot in the beginning of my practice for some reason, that I'd see all those rare things that they tell us, like, oh, you'll probably never see this. And then I would see that. So then I was like, oh my gosh, I need to know all these weird things. But I think, like, when you start talking to other doctors, because at first you also don't want to talk about, what your concerns are, or where you think you're lacking, or being an imposter. Like, you, even though I love the people I work with, at first it's sort of like, there's shame and you don't want to talk about these things. But then joining, like, the group that I joined with you and talking about it with other doctors, you see everyone has the same things. Like, we all go through this at the beginning, and we still do, but we have to, like, talk ourselves through things. And yeah, I think normalizing it in, like, a group setting where it's safe and you can talk about it and not feel like you're going to be judged is so important. And I think that part is sometimes what we're missing after residency. Like, we're pretty well supported in residency. Like, you could go see a preceptor that you like if you had an issue and talk things through. But then you're alone, and yes, you have these doctors and these friends, but yeah, there's shame, and I don't know, it's just sometimes hard to talk about, these hard thoughts that we have and being an imposter and all of that. So yeah, I think talking about it in a big group was really helpful, or not even a big group, in a group, like a safe group.
I think it is hard because, like, one of the ways that so, like many of us can kind of try to hide our own imposter syndrome is by being overly confident or certain about things, or and so it can be like, oh, you didn't know that. Oh, or we at least imagine everyone's doing that, though it's very rare, honestly, you find someone who's actually that much of like the classic know-it-all that you picture from school. Like, most people are like, I don't know either. But we all have this like haunting image that someone's gonna be like, why are you asking that? That's the most basic thing. Like, how did you even graduate? But like, I don't think I've actually ever experienced that. We just like were worried that's gonna happen for some reason.
Yeah, totally. And it's sometimes, I think we talk about our wins or the things that we've discovered, and then we don't talk about the things that we missed or we didn't think about. And that just keeps promoting the fact that you think all the other doctors know these amazing things and know so
Yes.
much more than you. And yeah.
It's so true. Like it is more vulnerable to be like, oh my gosh, I actually made a mistake yesterday, or like, oh my gosh, guys, I missed a diagnosis. And it's and sometimes you can hear it, but it's a way, and it's like they're beating themselves up, and that, but what if we really normalized all of it, like sharing the misses and ask no dumb question. Like it is helpful to have spaces where you can do that, and hopefully then we can help spread that more, even in just the general medical culture, you know?
Yeah, of course. And yeah, and sharing with other family doctors, I think, is just so important because we have a very different, our what we struggle with is probably very different than what specialists struggle with, because it's, you need to know so many things, and we just can't, like, it's impossible. There's no doctor that can know all of these things, all of these
Certainly
diseases,
not.
all the right things, right? Yeah.
No. And there's like so much that we don't, no one even knows yet. Like science
Yeah,
keeps
true.
marching on, right? So it's like,
Yeah,
I don't need
yeah,
space in my
yeah.
brain for all of that. No one even knows it yet. Oh,
And
so
that's another
good.
thing you realize at first. I think when you first start practicing, like at the beginning, maybe you're okay for a little bit, and then you realize there are so many things that I now know that I don't know, right? So at first, you like
Yes.
don't know that you don't know things, right? It feels like you
Yep.
sort of, you're like, yeah, I got this. I passed all of my exam. I aced it. I'm good. And then you sort of something comes back and it's like, oh, this is not what I was thinking this diagnosis was going to be. And then you're like, oh my gosh, I don't know. There's a lot of things I don't know. And that's
Yes.
okay. It's part of, life in general, not just medicine. But
Oh.
it's probably like a little bit of a shock when we first start practicing, if you when you realize that.
Yes. I still like last month, and it was funny, it was in front of a learner. We were talking about, what were we talking about? Oh, like breast disease, because mammograms are going to be lowered to 40. And so then one of my colleagues was casually saying like, oh yeah, but like if you have benign breast disease, like a fibroadenoma, that increases your risk of breast cancer. And like maybe you know this, but I was like, was I supposed to know that? I what? And she's like, yes. And I'm like, I feel like I was taught that you're not at higher risk
Yeah,
than that. And like,
I don't remember
I don't remember that.
that
And
at all.
like literally, I was like, I feel like the earth is shifting under me. Like it still was, but like what I did this time instead of internalizing is I was just externalizing my shock and like modeling to the learner, like, I didn't know this. Let's go look this up. And I'm still, actually, when we looked it up, it's very nuanced and like depends. And most of the time, it doesn't increase your breast risk. Just as like a fact check, because I share this on the podcast. Like, it's like not all benign breast disease and only maybe some types, but also maybe not. Like, it's actually not clear. But it was interesting because, like, she trained, she has been in practice longer than me. And I think it's just an interesting thing to know that, like, some things that were like, fact, like that was like a thing that everyone said and knew to be truth when she trained, and then that was no longer a thing. And it sounds like for you as well, like it's no longer a thing
Yeah,
that we
it
learn,
wasn't.
whether it still has a grain of truth in it or not. It's not a thing we learn. And so, like 10 years in, I'm like, excuse me, but like that is going to still happen, whether it's because I learned a different thread of medicine, or if something new comes in on the scene, like there's just always new things coming on the scene, right? We're never done
We
learning.
can't stay up to date all the time with everything, or we will
No.
eventually learn it, but if you don't come across it, then you don't know. And sometimes I think like that's nice when you go to a conference, because especially the family medicine conference, then you see like people ask questions and you're like, okay, yeah, they also didn't know. It's not just me. Like, we're all in this together. And yes,
Yes.
there are some doctors here that know, but then you realize, oh, this I knew. And then some people are asking questions. So yeah,
Yeah.
we're all the same. It's just we don't talk about it. But
We don't talk
it's
about
good that you
it.
have learners and you talk about it with your learners. So hopefully they'll feel better when they have to ask a question if it's something they don't know.
Yes. And same with you. Like, see, we can help shift the culture by like what I like as we because we made space for ourselves. And then now it's like, ooh, I think in some of the space, I actually feel ready to add in a little bit of different kinds of work. One of the things we both have done actually is like taking on some teaching, and it's kind of cool, right? Like it's a different way of giving back that isn't going to be for everyone, of course, but it's so nice, especially, I know for me, as someone who really used to feel a lot of imposter syndrome and then therefore thought I would never teach because like I was a fraud, so how could I teach other people? I don't know if you feel the same way, but it's like neat to shift your identity that way.
Of course. Yeah, exactly like you. I thought I would never teach. I'm like, I'm not good enough of a doctor to be able to teach other people. I just don't know enough. And they're like, no, I know the right amount. And yeah, we can. And, you know, with teaching students that, you know, like family medicine is a good specialty and helping, you know, increase family doctors. But yeah, you have to be in a good place and have your own space, be able to teach them to have their own space too. And yeah, come become family doctors.
Yes, we would love to have some lovely colleagues, you know. I'd love to ask a little bit more about the lifestyle medicine in particular, like, how are you finding conversations with your patients shifting as you like incorporate some of that knowledge in? Like, how are your patients responding to you talking more about lifestyle and these new ways that you've now been trained to do so?
Yeah, I think, you know, it goes both ways. There's some people that are not ready, they're not there, and they have enough on their plate, and they don't want to hear about this part. But I think because I'm so passionate about it, and we're starting to hear more about the impact of lifestyle on a lot of things, or maybe we've always heard about it, but I'm just noticing it more. But I think because they're seeing that I'm passionate, I'm taking care of myself and my body, then they are more interested in hearing about it, trying certain things. And even if it's not like going full blown with all of the pillars of lifestyle medicine, sometimes even just like adding more fruits and vegetables, more unprocessed foods to their diet, like they're willing to try little things. And then the patients that I have who are already in this world for, you know, just themselves reading up on it, they're so excited to talk about it. So yeah, I think it's nice to have this extra knowledge. And if patients want to hear about it, then great. If not, then it's okay. At least they know that it's there. And if they do have questions and they do want to talk about it, then I, you know, I have the space to talk to them about it. But it's not something I think we learned a lot when I was in medical school residency. Like, we didn't really have a lot of nutrition. And, you know, it's such a big part of our health. So it was, it made me feel a lot more confident having conversations with patients that don't want medication about other things that they can do in their life. And even if at the end of the day, no one follows any of my, you know, advice or recommendations or listens to any of the things that I talk about, I think, you know, just having it for myself and for my family and for my friends is so valuable. And sharing it with, like, when I went to a festival and did the talk, like, there's so many patients there that it was a smaller town, so they didn't have family doctors or they didn't have, you know, easy access to family doctors. So it was just so nice to be able to talk to some patients about this part of medicine that's not, you know, the medication and the traditional route, although, the, you know, there's still space for that. But it was nice just to have that, you know, that interaction with patients that's not that I about something I'm so passionate about. And I think, you know, people can see that, and it's nice to, they ask questions, and it's nice to be able to answer and to give them some guidance or some resources or some things to try. Cool. So it's been nice to be able to talk about, you know, something a little bit different than, you know, the typical medication route, which my patient, with my patients are the ones that were interested in hearing about it.
Yeah. And I love how, like, the things you're choosing, if for nothing else, they almost like hold you accountable to what you want for yourself anyway. And that I'm a big fan of choosing everything for my own benefit. And things that are lighting me up, and then trusting if they're things that are lighting me up, then that will be the most beneficial to anyone around me. Even if at first, whatever, you could convince yourself, like, I shouldn't do, I think lifestyle medicine sounds like a fabulous thing to do. I think GP psychotherapy sounds a fabulous thing to do. So I'm not like actually saying, but like say in your head, you're like, but it's not surgery. I don't know what you would think is better, but like, yeah, you know, you could have this hierarchy in your head of all the things you could be doing that someone would respect. I don't even know that would make you more money. Like, there's reasons you can choose to do things in your life. And it's interesting if the reason you choose is because you are simply interested and passionate, and especially because it's like something that no matter what you want to apply to your life, and then maybe tell some other people about it. Mm-hmm. I'm a big fan of that approach, if you can't tell.
Yeah, of course. No, it's so much better. You're right. Like a lot of colleagues at first were doing like an extra year of like specialty to do like palliative care or GP dermatology, or I had some friends go in to do like IUD insertion and things like that, but I did not like procedures. So I did not want to do any of those things, but it's, yeah. So if I had gone down that route, I probably would still be unhappy and feeling tired because, you know, it's still extra work I had to do to do this lifestyle medicine, but it's work that energizes me and that makes me, you know, happy. So yeah, I'm a big fan too of doing something because you actually like it and not because it sounds good on paper.
Yeah, we can get a little bit like there's this whole like being a comprehensive, well-rounded, you know, like that's sort of what they want us to be able to do everything. And I understand in theory why that makes sense, but it's in practice with humans, I just think we all are going to have affinity to different parts of this work, and there's enough of it to go around. So maybe we are okay if we all actually enjoy different parts of it, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I'll send my colleague the IUDs, and you know, the patient will have a better experience, and then they can come see me if they want to talk about nutrition, and then I'll be happy and everyone's happy. Yeah.
Totally. And then even, I mean, this is really inside baseball, but then you can bill consult codes and actually then everyone financially can be better supported for sure.
Oh, that's true. I'm sure there's a way to do it that makes more financial sense. I just don't have that yet to figure it out.
And that's secondary. Like I said, that can be secondary, but also like it's sort of interesting to think of how once you start thinking that way, it's interesting how things can line up where actually it can be beneficial in many ways if you just think it through. So I love it. Thank you so much for sharing that this has been your journey. I love hearing from people, even ones who say that they're still a work in progress or whatever. Like I said, even before we started, I think it's really helpful to hear people in the midst of making change and being in an ongoing discovery process. Because first of all, that's everybody. If there's someone who's saying, I'm at the finish line, come join me, I'm like very suspicious of them because there's still more life to live. And I hope that people listening can be inspired. Like you started with one thing, it was one talk and you tried to change one thing, and then that kind of got the ball rolling. And what if that's all you have to focus on? You don't have to focus on everything at once, but just like one small thing can change your life. You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
So good. Amazing. So then if you were like thinking of someone who maybe was like in the shoes you were in a few years ago, like in the couple, like when you were just starting out, so they're really stressed, they feel overwhelmed, they maybe think it's all about them, like maybe they should just leave medicine or whatever, like they're really at the height of their burnout and struggling. What words of encouragement or advice would you want to give to them?
I think like reach out to someone. I think it doesn't even matter who you start with. Like it could be a friend or a colleague that you really trust, or even call like the OMA, like the OPIP or something where they can match you with a mentor. Like I did some of that at the beginning. Or a coach like you, or, you know, a therapist. I think just having someone that you can start to talk to and just identify the issues, and they can ask you questions in a different way. Like I think you asked a lot of good questions about what do you want your life to look like? And I think when you're, you know, overwhelmed and, you know, working hard, you don't even ask yourself those questions. And sometimes it's not even like anything crazy. Like I just wanted to have no notes at night at the beginning, and then, you know, you can explore that. But I think if you reach out and you talk to someone, and then you, like you said, you just do the small things, and it doesn't have to be a big aha moment. Like that never happened to me. It was really just like a little thing here, a little thing there, and then it snowballed. So don't get overwhelmed. Like if someone had told me like 3, 4 years ago that I would be talking to you about how happy I am and in family medicine, and that I'm doing lifestyle medicine. I don't think I would have believed that them. So, just want to take a small step, whatever it is that you feel that you can do, that you have the energy to do, or talk to someone, and then it can snowball from there.
I love it. Beautiful. Well, thank you so much for taking some time out of your evening to meet with me and to battle the internet demons, which sometimes you're not the first, so this
I'm
has
so
happened, but we
sorry.
just persist. Oh, and I mean, it could be, it's like, it's usually just a combo of internets, but actually, I feel like we just kept rolling and we're just, that was perfect,
Get
actually. So
back on
thank you so
track.
much. Just get back on track. What are you gonna be worried about it? All right. So for everyone listening, I hope that you were inspired by Catherine's story. And I'd invite you to really think of, like you said right at the end, I love, like, what do you have the energy to do? You have the energy to do one small thing. Post in a Facebook group for some advice. Like, you have the energy to do one thing. So what's one thing you can have energy to do tonight or today, whenever you're listening to this, or this week? Because that could really get the snowball going as you start to move towards yourself, good things happen. So that's my takeaway from our conversation. And for everyone listening, I hope that you'll join us next week and I'll talk to you then. I would love to take this work deeper with you. Visit joanchanmd.com today and discover my growing menu of options for restorative medical education to suit your learning needs. I offer one-on-one coaching, customized workshops, and self-study courses that allow you to connect not only with my work on a deeper level, but also with other healthcare humans just like you. So, if you want to start humanizing your work in healthcare to a deeper level and do it in community with others, please visit joanchanmd.com and find those options and what fits you and your life today.